Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making.
The complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton. And y'all, you did it. Woo, best woo. Fans in the world. It's kind of sweet, right? Our one-year anniversary right around there.
Yep.
And y'all did it because you took the time to go vote for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. And Bloody Angola has made it in the top 10 in the world, top 10 finalists for the awards, for the People's Choice Podcast Awards. And we want to thank y'all. And I want to remind you, when you signed up, they had a box where you would check if you would be willing to be a finalist judge. So now that we made the finals, it goes to, I think they take like 20,000 out of the millions that voted, and they're going to send them emails. And if you get that email, y'all check your spam or check each whatever
email. Sometimes they'll go to the spam folders. I know that even in my personal case, Podcast Awards was sending me emails, and when I couldn't find them, I checked my spam folders and there they were. It's a mass, you know, when they send out these emails from websites like that, sometimes if you have Google Mail or something, it'll end up sending it to your spam. So check that.
So yeah, check this. I would think by Sunday they would have sent them all out. Maybe begin next week. We'll let you know on next week's episode. We want to thank you again. It's a real honor. It just vindicates what we do.
Yeah.
And we love y'all and we appreciate you. Now, our patron members, we want to thank y'all and thank you for your continued support. And we just love you to pieces. And what we're going to do today is we are going to take a episode out of the Patreon vault. Now, everybody that's not a Patreon member, you're going to get one of our best. I think, Jim, that our best episodes are locked up.
Yeah.
And we're going to take one of these out and play it for everybody. The Patreon members, don't you worry. You know, we certainly give more than I give on Real Life or Crime, but next week we're going to give you all a double up. So to replace the one that you had, and we'll give you another one. How about that? But we want everybody to enjoy this episode. And I know if you can't be a patron member, times are hard and everything else, and we get that, but they get a lot of benefits and
commercial-free early releases,
transcripts,
things, bonus episodes.
And we have how many bonus episodes we have locked up?
It's a lot. It's at least 12 to 15.
Yeah, it's a lot. And considering I have on in the 20s for Real Life Real Crime. So want everybody to enjoy it. And
we appreciate and love each and every one of you. And so stay tuned for this. This is, like Woody said, one of the locked up episodes for our patrons. If you like what you hear and you're able to help support, please do so.
Yep. And don't forget, y'all, if you voted, check your emails and go in and give us the final vote for Bloody Angola in the history. And for Real Life Real Crime, we made the finals for the Adam Curry's People's Choice, Best Male Host, Drama and Storytelling, and True Crime. And we want to also mention that Kelly Jennings Unspeakable made the top 10 for the True Crime also. So if you want to vote for her, y'all give her a vote. She's fire and she's been on this show numerous times.
That's right.
All right. Well, love y'all and hope you enjoy it.
straight line, shackle and chain. Old gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Wrangler.
Everyone, and welcome to Bloody
Angola,
a podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
And I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
And we have a special guest.
Yes, we do.
I'm very special.
You are.
My mama told me so.
It's
the famous Kelly Jennings, the host of Unspeakable. And today is a special patron-only episode.
Patreon members.
Love y'all. You're the best in the world. Thank you for helping this show run. We just concluded probably the best series
ever.
The famous warden, Burl Cain. And today we're just going to freestyle a little bit. KJ worked for Burl. I worked for Burl. And we're going to talk about him a little bit and give y'all a little knowledge from the college.
Let's go around and we'll start with Kelly. Let's just give us your experience with Angola.
Sure. So I was a college kid. I was about to graduate and there was a warden there, Kathy Fontenot, and teeny tiny little spitfire of a thing came and spoke to my college class, and I was really intrigued by her. I've always been intrigued by crime. So I asked her about working at Angola, to my mother's horror, and she said, well, hey, come on by. We'll give you a tour. And that happened. I got a private tour. I was hooked, and I was hired shortly thereafter.
How old were you?
23.
And tell us the first time about when you met Burl.
So, you know, he's kind of a legend, like the myth, the man, the legend. I can tell you I was kind of, if I'm being honest, I was kind of struck when I saw him because he wasn't what I expected. You know, in the movies, when you see a warden, I'm thinking Shawshank Redemption, the guy on top of the roof with the, you know, with the tough jaw and telling people what to do. And he walked in, he was like Santa Claus, you know, he's this round little guy. Yeah. And at that time, he's lost a lot of weight now, but he was this round fella and that white hair. And I was just like, I can't believe this is the Burl Cain.
Right.
And so he was very nice, very cordial, very – he did not have the air of I'm in charge about him. It was like you were just meeting somebody. And right. I like that. You know, he wasn't imposing, but you knew better.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
that's Warden 1. And any time on the radio you heard Warden 1, shut up.
Yep.
Listen.
Yep.
Which was not
that
very
was
awesome.
Burl Cain's call sign, I guess
right.
you could say.
Warden
right.
1.
Warden 1.
Warden 1. And I was scared to talk on the radio because I was like, I don't yeah, want anybody to know who I am. Lay low. But, you know, I had a, I didn't spend a whole lot of time with Warden Cain. However, I did have interactions with him at points in time. And I just, my respect for him was through the roof. For the way he handled things.
Right.
And I was in awe of, it's like I wanted to learn more about watching how calm he remained in
right.
situations that I would have been like, what the fuck, you know?
Right.
But I was young, you know?
Yeah.
I'm almost 40 now. I was 23 then.
What
almost
year was
a good
that?
Thing.
I'm sorry?
What year?
2008, 9.
Yeah. So I met him for the first time in 1991 or maybe 1990 when I went to work for DCI, Dixon mm-hmm. Correctional Institute. And he was the warden there before he went on to Angola. And I met him briefly, got introduced to him when I got hired, and my dad got me the job through a state representative or whatever. So I probably, otherwise he wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
But he just said, you know, like
nepotism.
You, exactly. At his best. And like you, I actually didn't have any preconceived notion, but I
had you heard of
this
him?
Little guy. Yeah, yeah. I certainly had heard of him, and that he was the boss man, and that they had what they call the White House administrative
mm-hmm.
building. And he's behind the big desk, and he got up and shook my hand. And like I said, he was short in stature, kind of like Santa Claus with the gray hair and the glasses and of that accent, right? And, hey, Mr. Overton, how you doing? And I know you're going to do me a good job, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I was originally stationed, after I got out of the academy, at the largest rec room at DCI mm-hmm. instead of being put on a dorm. And the first time I saw him, and actually, yeah, I'd see him from time to time. I work nights. Very seldom would see him, but I'd see him from time to time. I had to open the door, let him through. And I always remember my name, and he'd go on about his business. But at the time, DCI had a crawfish plant, okay, where that's like the field workers in Angola. Mm-hmm. They had to work 12-hour shifts, and they ran it 24 hours a day during crawfish season. And they would bring in 18 wheeler loads of sacks of crawfish, and they boiled them there.
That's like gold in Louisiana.
So they boiled them there, and they had to peel 16 pounds of just crawfish meat. They weighed it at the end of a 12-hour shift, and if you didn't get your 16 pounds, they put you in the hole.
You working.
Yeah. You're not peeling them like I peel them with your teeth.
Yeah.
You're peeling them each little individual one.
Wait, so would they raw peel them, or were they boiling them?
No, they were boiling them, and they would peel them out, and then they would take them right there in the same building, and they would
flash freeze them,
and they were sold in all of
that's great.
All through Louisiana in the seafood section, but it didn't say came from a prison. It just said Louisiana seafood, whatever, right? So long story short, the inmates decided they were going to buck up, and then they weren't going that night to work. And they like, so I did work call, crawfish plant, let's go, because they had to come through the workroom off the dorms. And they piled up in the back of the rec room and said, we're not going. So you're not going. Said, nope, we're bucking up. We're not going. I said, great. I hit my pager, and Captain Ray Newman ends up coming to the door, and he's like, what's going on? I said, they're refusing to go to work. And he told them, said, yo, get to work. And they said, fuck you. We're not going. So he said, I'll be back. And so he went and called it in, and Burl evidently hadn't left yet. Burl came in with assistant wardens. I forget who they were. I think Jimmy LeBlanc was one of them. And they all came through the door, and he said, Sergeant Overton, what's going on? He said, they bucking up, and they all could hear him. I said, yes, sir. He said, I want you to go over there and give the first one you see a direct verbal order to report to work. And when he says no, then here's some handcuffs. You cuff his ass, and we're going to swing him. And we're going to see how long this lasts. And they're like, we ain't going. So I walked up the first guy, and I said, I'm giving you a direct verbal order. Get to that door. Go to the crawfish plant. Go to work. He said, I ain't going. I said, then you're under arrest. Turn around and put your hands behind your back. Cuffed him up. Got him out. And guess what? They started.
I started lining up.
I said, deuce now, it up, baby. Next one. I said, give me your direct reward. Go to work. He's like, yes, sir. They all followed. They didn't even Burr was there.
Yo, people that's what I did.
And Burr was like, the situation handled. And that could turn into a real shit show.
Yeah.
Right? But he said, just get one. And I did. And that's how he handled it.
Well, they're going to test you, right?
That's an awesome story.
Well, they weren't testing me. They were testing the system.
Well,
And they were like, oh, yeah, we ain't going. No, we bucking up. And
it's like a bunch of kids till daddy walks in.
So, yeah. And my Burl showed up. And he gave me the instructions, not the captain. Yeah. Anybody else. He said, you handle this. I said, yes, sir. And I did it, and afterwards he said, more than one way to skin a fish in the sun.
That is a freaking great story.
Indeed.
The reason I got put on the working cell block for so long, somebody did something, cursed me or something, and I was in the rec room. It was still early in the evening. It was summertime because the rec yard was still open. And I just come on shift, and it might have been an account or something. I told her to do whatever, and he said, fuck you. And he walked through the dorm and out into the rec yard. I can't leave my post, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had hit the pager. Ray came in. I told him what happened. Captain did. And he went out there, and he got him, and he brought him back in, and it put him in the hole. And, of course, I had to write him up. He said, next time it happens, Woody, you give them a direct verbal order, and they don't obey, use whatever force necessary to take the situation under control. I'm like, okay.
Right? Duly noted.
Shit, it wasn't a week later. It was a Sunday night. It was closed down rec room for everybody but the trustees who were up for whatever reason.
Yeah.
A couple of them were allowed to stay up. And I told them to catch the house. It's going to be lights out, whatever time, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, whatever it was. And this one dude was standing on the back wall by the water fountain. He had his foot up on the wall, and he leaned back like this, arms crossed. And I'm walking around and herding him into the dorms. And he's just looking at me like I'm stupid. And I said, hey, man, catch your house. He said, fuck you. I said, no, fuck you. Catch your house. He said, fuck you. So I hit the pager, and I said, you're under arrest, and you come with me. And he turned around and went on to the dorm. Well, right in his words, kicked in my head, and I said, stop. And he ignored me. So I go into the dorm, and dorms could run like this and this, and the sergeant's desk up there with two sergeants, one to watch each dorm. And I went in there, and I tackled his ass. And we went to fist fighting.
Uh-oh.
I'm talking about, like, fisticuffs. I mean, all that defense tactic bullshit they teach you.
That goes out the window.
It goes out the window. You get punched one time, you punch it back, right?
Yeah.
So we're literally fist fighting. I'm not thinking of the repercussions that could have happened. But Captain Noonan said when he hit that door, rec room door, and it's a big rec room, he said he hit the rec room door and he couldn't see me. He said, you need sugar to turn to shit. And,
yeah.
and he ran back to me. One of the sergeants had got off the desk and was trying to help me. The other one was just frozen in fear. And long story short, we get him cuffed up. That one that froze in fear got fired, one of the only fireable offenses on the spot.
Yeah, you have to.
Help another officer. Besides, like, if you get caught having sex or bringing in drugs, otherwise it's civil service. But anyway, long story short, get it out. Ray was like, brought me in the captain's office, got somebody to relieve me, lieutenant on my post. And he was like, man, I can't believe you did that. You could have started a riot. And I said, motherfucker, you told me to do it.
Yeah.
And he's like, bro, you got to go home. I'm like, I'm getting fucking fired for doing what you told me to do? It was a Sunday night. He said, you got to go home. He said, I'll call you at home. We didn't have cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll call you at home later. And I got home, and he called me and said, you need to be in Ward Kane's office first thing in the morning.
Which and your butthole went, oh!
Commonly referred to as being called on a carpet. Yeah. I, I was more pissed than anything. I'm like, fuck it. I'm getting fired for this bullshit. Motherfucker told me to do it. And so I go in and I was there and they called me in his office and Ray was there and a couple of, I think Jimmy LeBlanc was there. And they said, Gordon sitting behind his desk and said, lean back, kind of like Mr. Kearney's chair. He said, Sergeant Overton, tell me what happened. And I told him just what I told y'all. And he said, well, shit. And he didn't say shit. He said, well, son, you did exactly what you were supposed to do. I said, well, thank you, Warden. He said, but you could have caused a riot. I said, yes, sir, but he told me to do it.
Did you die?
And,
no.
And he said, you're right. He said, you're absolutely right. And he said, I like the initiative. He said, but what I'm going to do, and I'm going to send you somewhere where you could fight every day. Because obviously I was a pretty big, like 250 pounds, swole up dude.
I can't imagine.
And he said, I'm going to send you somewhere where you could fight every day. But he said, you're not going to have to go out of your way to look for fighting because these boys are going to give you enough trouble. And, you know, somebody's going to give you enough trouble. Yeah. Every day you're going to have to put hands on them. And that's when I went to the work and cell block, which, as you know, is a 90-day extended lockdown without any high court or low court write-ups. And so if you're in there on your first day and you get a write-up, you got to do your whole 90 days before you go before the board, and they're automatically going to turn you out. So they act ass the rest of the time anyway. And all the cell distractions and the fighting and everything we had to do, and I never had an issue with any of that, right? I did it legal. I wasn't an asshole. I didn't do anything that wasn't deserved. Sure. But while I was on that cell block,
I bet you that dorm. I'm just thinking about they were like, what the hell? When they saw white boy complying.
And the thing was, the white boy is a good looking white. I'm not saying I was good looking. But a white boy, a physically fit white boy working as a correction officer, they automatically assume you're gay or they tried you for being gay, right? Yeah. And I approve that point to. That they were wrong, but I was on the working cell block and I had the A and the B tiers and I had two admin sec tiers, and the one that was facing the I think it was A tier facing the prison. So the back of dorms 3 and 4 and that side of the prison, it has the concertina wire, yeah. And then the working cell block has its own wire enclosure and concertina wire and all that, and so they're facing. It's a long row of cells. Two bins to a cell, and they have windows, and that's what you're facing the yard. I get there at 6 o'clock. Right at 6 o'clock, I'm making my first count and going down, and they got to be silent during the count. And look, I had respect. They knew when I walked on the tier, if I said hold the noise, you shut the fuck up, because if you didn't, I was going to put the pen and paper on you, and then we're coming back to cell extract you later on, right? But when the new ones would come back, they would egg them on. When I came on, they'd be like, hey, this white boy's come on. He's a bitch. You need to buck up
bunch
on him.
Bunch of teenagers.
And they're doing it because they knew I was going to be like, okay, you know, fuck you. Go down and write him up, pop him through the thing, give him about 30, 45 minutes to get riled up, flood a cell, whatever you want to do. But we're coming in and get that ass because you had to be removed from that to put on admin sec, wait for your court hearing. So anyway, I'm making the count, and I got to respect that out of like 90% of them. And, you know, then they all start hollering and cheering. And I'm like, what the fuck? I said, hold the noise. And they wouldn't. And they were hollering and cheering. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And so I made my count, and I'm like, I'm not going to sit here and just scream and break.
Right.
I can't arrest every motherfucker on the tier. So I go off.
Which
they called me on the intercom and they said, come to the front. Get the front, and Miss Shirley, a black lady, was working the control center, and she said, you got anybody out in the yard? Because they had a yard, but the yard wasn't even by the window where it was at the end of the tier. I said, no, and that door was locked. And she said, I said, why? She said, because we just got a call of an inmate on the yard. And I'm like, no, not my. I did the physical count, and my people were there. I said, but they were all down there screaming. You could still hear them hooting and hollering. And I'm like, what's going on? And then like 10 seconds later comes out, inmate escape, right? Mm-hmm. So actually two inmates escape. And what it was, they 24 hours, 7 days a week, they have to figure out how to get over. Right where the work and sale block was, on the other side of the fence where the regular compound fence was, they had where the posts met, there was a gap in the concertina wire. Mm. And so this white guy and a black inmate both used that time because they had to go in for the 6 o'clock count off the yard of summertime, and they used that time to run, and they jumped
and
the fence
where the
right
hell
there.
You gonna go?
So they jumped the fence. Wait, listen. They jumped the fence right in front of my fucking that tier, and they saw them, and that's why they were doing all the cheering. They were holding. and I didn't know. I didn't fucking see them. I wasn't looking out the window.
Yeah.
And so they ran. Now everybody gets called out. Whole prison goes on a shutdown. Burl comes out. All the wardens come out. Chase team's out. They set up the printers. They know how far they can go, et cetera. And I'll never forget the I'm getting ahead of myself.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But this went on all weekend, and they caught the white guy like on Saturday, and I'll never forget when they called him. The chase team called him, and somebody had a hot mic, and when they called him,
it was going down.
All of the cursing and the, beating thumps and everything else. And I was like, holy shit. And so Burl came in. It was after dark by this time. They called him when I was on shift. So it was after 6 o'clock. And Burl came in a couple hours later. And he's got all the security around him. And he's dragging this dude. And he's got all the briar scratches on his face. A little bitty white guy. And he brought him in. And the first admin seg tier had the windows that face that you could still see where that spot was.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he put him in, I think it was A1, the first cell. And I said, open the door, Sergeant Overton. And I called for it to be open. They had him take the cuffs off of him. And he said, boy, I'm putting you here for this reason. See that fence where you went over? He said, every morning when you wake up, that's going to be the first thing you see. And every night before you go to sleep, it's going to be the last thing you see, that spot where you went over the fence. And said, you're never going to forget it. Now, check this out. That dude was like short timer. He had like 15 days till he got out.
Oh, would they add? What an idiot.
But, and the story gets a little bit better. One of my dudes was taking a nurse around, and he kept him permanently in that cell. And they ended up catching the black guy on Sunday in a traffic stop or whatever. That guy had full blown AIDS in the early 90s. You were going to die from
pretty much. The white guy did?
Yeah, and so I knew this because I had to assist the nurse and give him his AZT or whatever it was they were using at the time, and he had full blown AIDS. And another time, a couple months later, I was coming on duty, making my 6 o'clock round, and I hear Lieutenant Barlow hollering over the thing, get over here. And I run over to where he is. He's at that guy's cell, door's open. He's got a string around his neck. Now he'd been on suicide watch for months now, meaning he had no mattress, no nothing. And you're supposed to shake a cell down as soon as you get there. Well, I hadn't even got to make it around. I mean, I just got there and making my first count on starting with the work of cell blocks and work my way around. But Barlow had gone down, and this four way had cameras. They didn't have cameras on tiers or anything like that. He'd gone down and saw him down on the floor. And when I got there, his face was almost black. It was so dark blue. And he had had some trustee, passed him a little bitty string that they used to tie up the sheet bundles. And they didn't have bars. They had screens in the cell. And he took that and he tied it to the screen. He tied it around his neck and he leaned forward to hang himself. And not off the ground, just leaned forward. What happened was the string broke, but not before he passed out, and it did break off his neck. And so he's laying there. His face is black. He's got white foam in his mouth, and we didn't have any protective gear like the shit they have now. But you put it in the mouth and the plastic shit to guard it,
like the one way.
And Barlow's like, you know, and Lieutenant Barlow, I'm sure he's retired, if not dead by now, but a great guy. And he said, you know CPR, don't you? You know CPR? I said, yes, sir. And he said, give it to him. I said, fuck that motherfucker. He's going to die. Because I know he's got full-blown nose. He's got the foam around his mouth. I ain't fucking giving him CPR. Yeah. And but he was already dead. So that's how I ended up back there. And that's how Burl Kane was. I'm going to tell you something. Burl Kane didn't play.
No.
When he brought him back there, he was pissed. And you would, I think, other than an attack on an officer, you escape. That was his big pet peeve.
Yeah. Well, very interesting. And before you get into some of your cool stuff, you know, what intrigues me for those of you that aren't familiar with KJ, I know there's not many of you out there by now, but she's young when she goes to work at Angola. Attractive, great-looking chick.
Not the chick,
goes in
not
there.
Don't take a picture of me today. I don't have my hair brushed or makeup.
So the cool thing about KJ is she's the real deal. A lot of messages that she gets on her podcast that I see because I produce that podcast or how badass she is.
Oh, my God.
And she really is, though. Yep. She's the real deal. KJ will jerk you up in a second if she has to. But even for someone as badass as KJ, at that age, were you intimidated of Angola? Was it something that do you remember any kind of fear when you first started working there? Was it more excitement?
So, good question. I think I was too young and stupid to be fearful of the inmates. I was more enthralled with, wow, these are the bad guys I read about, you know, and I'm like looking at them and how they live. I was more nervous about disappointing or making a mistake.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I knew that this was a high stakes game that I was in, and it's not a job where you make a mistake and you get fussed at and you move on. I mean, it could be life or death.
Right.
And,
that's a great point. Actually.
You or anyone else.
Yeah. And your action or inaction can cause somebody else a lot of harm. And but no, I was so young back then. I was young and excited and didn't really – I don't think I understood what I walked into.
Yeah.
It's looking back at it, you know, now I'm like, Jesus. You know, like some of the stuff I said and did, I'm like, oh, my God, child, no. But nothing that can take the place of experience.
Right.
Sure.
You learn. I mean,
learn as you go.
Yeah.
Back to Burl real quick. Mm-hmm. He respected me enough. He knew I respected him. He respected me enough. He got me to do some things I'm not even going to talk about on the air within the prison system he actually called me to the White House and was like, hey, I want you to take care of this for me. Yes, sir. I'm not saying it's anything illegal or whatever, but I'm not going to talk about it. But the deal being is that dude always had my respect.
Yeah, mine too.
So many levels, but I like to think that I talk to people the way I want to be talked to, et cetera, and I respect people until you prove me otherwise. And I know that's what he did to me. And throughout my career, wherever I was, whatever department, et cetera, I always like to watch other people work. Mm-hmm. And I glean what I consider their best shit and adapted it and made it mine. And I made so much of mine off of Burl, especially on how I interacted with people. But just because I'm interacting with you and I'm starting out low doesn't mean I'm not going to flip the switch.
Yeah.
And do it within the legal grounds and everything else. And that's what I gleaned from Burl. And I would add on that, I still add on to this day. So he really, really was one of my most major influences in my entire career.
Wow.
There was a guy, and I can't remember his name. I remember he was a major and he worked on the cell blocks at Maine Prison. And I always liked when he was on shift and he never knew it. I never said a word to him, but it was a tall black gentleman. He was a major, like I said, and, high and tight, man. He smelled good. His uniform was high and tight, nice, crisp. Right. Hair was cut. And when he walked, he didn't say much. But when he spoke, people listened. Yeah, and it was one of those things that really – he impressed me. I wish I could remember his name. He was – you know, he's got to be retired now. But that guy impressed me, too. I would watch how he worked. I would watch how he – when he stood at the bars and the inmates were speaking to him, he didn't say much. Mm-hmm. He listened. He didn't say much. Right. But when he did respond – that was it.
Right.
And
right.
then he moved on.
Well, and back to it, because I you know, told him we were going to talk about Burl a little bit.
Yeah.
So you just reminded me. I did have a lot more interactions with him, especially when I was on the WCB, because he would come.
Working cell block.
And Admin 6. He would actually come back there and make rounds every once in a while on the evening shifts. And look, a convict won't talk to him. He'd stop and talk to them.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, Warden, I got, and they can't believe they're getting to talk to the man, right? Mm-hmm. And Warden, I got this grievance, I got this. And he's like, well, you know what you need to do.
File you an ARC.
File this. And you know what? I'm going to read it and da da da.
And if you're bullshitting me, I'm going to remember it.
If you're bullshitting me, then I'm going to handle that too. And don't waste my time and I won't waste yours. But if you got a good grievance, then we're going to address it.
Yeah.
There's respect in that. Because he was diplomatic in right. the way that he did. Now, honestly, y'all, I was a nobody when I was there. Right. I didn't have privy yeah. information.
She was not.
I was classification. Yeah, right. I mean, I was classified, but I was not like up at the White House. For the listeners, this is kind of interesting. There's a book that he wrote called Cain's Redemption.
Yep, I have it.
Yeah, I've read it. I actually use it in my class and have the students read certain chapters because mm-hmm. I believe he's the only warden to have ever seen all three methods of death penalty, hanging, yep, execution, exactly right. and lethal injection. But there's some good stories in there. But he also talks about his faith and that you've got to have faith behind bars. And I appreciate him for that because he tries to turn positives out of negatives and give people the ability to change. But he, if you don't want to change, he will recognize that in you. And that's a wrap. I remember one time, and tell me if I've told this story before.
No, it doesn't matter. Go ahead.
I remember one time I was working the rodeo. So there's the Angola Rodeo, and, you know, that's a big deal for inmates. It's kind of a break from the everyday norm. They mm-hmm. are able to make money with their hobby craft that they make, and you have to behave.
Yeah, and we just talked about that on Burl's episode, the third episode that dropped today when we're recording this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't want that taken away, right? So you're going to behave so that you don't lose it. But sometimes the assholes behind bars – don't care. They do what they want to do anyway. So I just happened to be standing there and I was just in awe of it, even though it was just one or two sentences. But it was me and another major. I don't remember his name, but we were standing there. We were discussing something because I was escorting HBO around while they were filming and making sure that the inmates didn't, you know, act stupid. But another rank walked over and he had Warden Cain with him. Uh-oh. And they started talking, and I'm just standing there because I'm like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. Like,
Warden
what's
one.
Going down?
Warden
what you need one. To do? I'm going to jump on a horse, and I'm going to go lasso somebody, you know? Right, like, right, what you need?
Whatever you
I'm there for you. But very calm and collected, the rank guy said, look, we kind of have an issue at the gate. And he said, what's going on? And the rank said, we have some – I take that back. It was not the rodeo. It was the – Returning Hearts program at the rodeo grounds. And that's a program where the dads get to come and, or their dads are there, but their kids get to come and they're trying to tell these inmates, you have to be a part of your kids' lives, even from behind bars. And they can play games and they can hang out with less restriction, like in the visiting hall. But it was on the rodeo grounds.
Right.
And they said, okay, what's the issue? And the guy said, you know, so-and-so, whatever the inmate's name was, he said, yeah. And he said, his kids are here. And Warden Cain said, okay. And they said, well, we had to lock him up on a, I think it was a sex offense. Like, it was a serious offense. And he was like, all right, well, and they said, but the kids just drove like 5 hours because he never told his kids that he was on lockdown because he was trying to play the system and say, they got to bring me to the program. And Warden Cain, you know, he didn't make much facial expression. He just kind of stared at the rank for just a second and looked at him. And then he just in thinking turned and looked at me. And I just stared back, you know.
You just look down in a way. And don't look at me in the eyes.
I'm like, whose ass you need me to beat? I'm here. I'm here. Right. You know, I'm 5'4", but I'm 6'11", in my mind. Right. But, and then he just looked back at the rank, and he said, that's all right. Let him out. Hmm. And the rank said, what? He said, let him out. Let him come spend all the time that he wants with his kids. I'm not punishing those kids. And right. that line just that hit me in the so heart. Classic. He said, I will not punish those kids. Yeah. Let them see their daddy. And then I probably shouldn't repeat this, but I will. He said, and then when they leave, please make sure he knows during his escort that his ass is mine. Yes. And I was like, oh, player. Right.
That's so classic. That gave me
that's like, really cool.
That's just a genius.
Right? It's genius. You're not going to punish those kids.
And respect and maybe those kids took something away from that day that we'll never know about, right?
Right.
But Burl was like, yeah.
Let him out.
Yeah. The right thing to do is this, and then after I'm going to take care of it.
And I'm sure he was miserable for a long
time. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. And I don't mean physical ass is mine. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And
let's, we get it.
Let's touch on this before we close, because there's a lot of controversy always has surrounded Burl, and anybody in the position of power is going to have somebody that's going to hate on
him. You just nailed it.
But I'll tell you, the allegations, you know, the shit that I heard over the years at DCI, like and about using shit for personal gain. Like, there was a rumor that one comic said that worked at Cow Barn said every time two calves are dropped, one goes to Burl's property in Texas and one becomes the state property, state of Louisiana. Right. Well, it's just fucking lie. It's just bullshit, right? And never.
But you can't unring the bell. So once you start the rumor, people believe it.
Burl never bought into it, and we were talking about this earlier. Yeah. You each put yourself in a position of public anything, like you are now in the podcast, and Jim also. You're going to have haters, and they're going to say shit, and you know what? 99.9% of the time, it's just best to ignore it because you know who you are.
And you're not a hater, bitch. You're a fan. Like, if you spend that much time on me.
Well, I'm talking about all the shit that I heard on Burl over the years. I mean, first of all, he's no dummy.
Yeah.
Okay? And secondly, he's not a billionaire who made.
Right.
Do I believe he passed? I know he passed up being the Secretary for Department of Corrections and let LeBlanc have it because he believed in what he was doing in Angola. Mm-hmm. Other people say he passed up because he was making too much money, pocketing too much money off Angola. Whatever. And then in his career, when they brought all these allegations against him about misuse of rodeo funds and all this stuff and all this stuff and all this stuff.
Like, they don't get audited.
Guess what happened?
Nothing.
But he had enough, and that's why he went to Mississippi.
Yeah,
but,
I mean, so at some point, you just got to say, you know, well, this ain't worth it. I mean, just, you know, being attacked from every angle, and I'm out here changing.
Like, I spent my whole life in this.
He brought the church to Angola.
Yeah, and now they have the culture. 40 churches.
Yeah.
And we talked about the church, the biggest church, the Alamo Church. Yesterday on the episode that y'all are hearing today. So I just want to get that out there because I know some of our listeners are going to be like, oh, well, you know, I heard Burl's dirty and I heard this.
Well, if you weren't there, whatever. Then you heard. You didn't witness, you know. Right, right. And I'll tell you this, too, about him that I respected. And it isn't because it was me, but it was just my personal interaction. There was a warden that I liked on the West Yard. Tall, I'm not going to say his name, but tall, strapping, black, man. And he was the warden over. And I just thought so much of him. I respected him. I liked the way he carried himself. And I was like, these are the people, man, you know, that know what they're doing. And I got called in one day by him, and he blew me down. Man, I got an ass chewing like I had never had before. Right. and maybe because I was young, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. But at the time, that was the first time I'd ever been, quote unquote, in trouble at work. I didn't. And I'm looking at him and I didn't really argue with him. But what he was saying I did, I absolutely did not do. Right. It was not me. It was about paperwork that had been given out that should not have been given to inmates. I know what I do on the daily.
Right.
That I did not do.
Right.
And so I just said, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Because I didn't really know what to say. And I walked out. And it hurt my feelings, sure, you know, because I wanted so bad. I'm a right fighter, and that's not always a good thing, but I want to be like, that was not me. You can come see what I did. Now, what I did do was create a sheet, which I probably shouldn't have done, but I don't care. And when they would request, inmates would request library time to go to the library, it was always them handing me little sheets of paper and me writing notes everywhere. So I went and created a spreadsheet, and I made them like this little log that they would fill out for me. And I worked so efficiently with it. And one of the other people that was a classification officer got shitty with me over that. I'm like, bitch, if that's your problem, you need to get somewhere.
Right.
You know, get out of here. But anyway, but this I didn't do. But what are you going to do? All right, whatever. I'll move on. I didn't even know what the form was, and that disturbed me. So when I went, I'm never going to let something go. When I went back to my office, I started calling around and saying, what is this form? Where does it start? Why would it be here? Like, and I finally tracked down where it came from and who handed it out. I didn't go whining to anybody. I just, for me, needed to know how I got tied up in it. Right. And it was because someone was a jerk. It was, you know.
Right.
Anyway, so probably that same day, if not the next day, I mean, I got my butt chewed. I was walking out of the A building, main prison, and Warden Kane was standing there. And I was like, oh, hi, you know, and he said, Kelly, right? And I was like, oh, my, yes.
That's a good name.
Yeah. He said, I need to talk to you for a second. And y'all, my heart dropped into my butthole. And I hadn't done anything, but I was like, shit, if I'm accused of this, what else could I have done that I didn't do, you know? Right. And I immediately think, like, I'm going to prison. I don't know. I'm already there. And he said, I need to ask you about Warden so-and-so. And I said, okay. And he said, tell me about him. But that was it.
Right. Yeah.
And I said, I think he's a great warden. He said, you like him? I said, mad respect. I think he's doing his job. I think that he is fair. Now, in my heart, I felt like what had happened to me was unfair, but I felt like he was a fair man. And I just had nice things to say. And he kind of shook his head and he said, okay, I've gotten what I need. And he walked off. And I remember just standing there going, why the hell are you asking me? I'm a nobody. And then I don't know if it was the same day or the next day or whatever when he was working. He called me. The other warden called me in. He said, I need to talk to you. And I was like, I'm so tired of being spoken to.
I quit.
Oh, my God. I just sent him to the library, you know. And he said, I want to apologize, number one. I think they were testing me. I really do.
Yeah.
He said, because I know you were not the one who handed that form out. But I had never gone back and said anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, and I know you spoke to Warden Kane. And I was like, you did? You do? And he was like, yeah. And I appreciate that because I appreciate what feedback you gave.
Right.
Then I thought, okay, whew, my name's cleared. I didn't do anything. But looking back on it, I'm kind of like,
is it a test?
I don't know.
I think that probably
he listened to what I had to say.
Yeah, probably he actually found out that, you know, you weren't the culprit. And I used to say, unfortunately, some of the correction officers you work with are worse than the convicts.
And they are. They are.
But the best people in the world, too, right? But
right.
Good, bad, and every profession. But you better believe that, and I'll end it with this.
Yeah.
We'll end this episode with this. Burrell was such a master of what he did because he had his pulse on everything. Now, didn't mean he micromanaged, but he surrounded him, smart enough to surround himself, as any good leader is, with the best people.
Yes.
Doesn't mean those people aren't going to mess up or violate your trust at some points, whatever. Say, you, they can tell you, hey, this is going on, whatever, you take him at the word. Then, you know, somehow Burrell heard something about that situation. And he wanted to see, if you were getting tested by anybody, you were getting tested by Burrell.
Mm-hmm.
Because Burrell wanted to see, is she going to carry a grudge? Is she going to pitch a bitch fit or whatever, whatever? And when you just gave the guy his props in the proper area, first of all,
I got taken out to lunch the following week by a warden in the middle of the day, mm-hmm. and nothing happened. We just sat there and talked and chit-chatted.
That's like, hey, give this girl a little pat on the back.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. All these years later.
Yeah. And so, but anyway.
Thank you, Warden One.
Thank you.
So I think he's a legend. I know he's a legend in his time. And he's probably impacted so many lives in ways when. Just
uncountable.
You can't measure that.
He did exactly what God put him on the surf to do.
That's right.
And the series was fire.
Loved it.
And thank you for coming in. And I hope y'all patron members got to glean a little bit more than the rest of the people.
That's right.
And hear those stories.
Thank you for supporting us.
Thank you for supporting us. And if we owe you something, let us know. But show couldn't run without you. And we love and appreciate y'all. And KJ, thank you for coming in.
Always my pleasure.
Right.
And the unspeakable one.
y'all go check it out. Follow or like, subscribe. You won't be sorry.
Absolutely. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Overton.
Your host of Bloody
Angola.
A podcast 142 years in the making.
Complete story of America's bloodiest prison.
Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.